You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby.
Referred to may already have happened.
In this segment of our show, John Aslin will be giving us an update on Rose City Riot.
So what's the latest with Rose City Riot?
Well, we have a Try It Day that is going to be happening on Saturday, September 27th, beginning at 10 a.m. at the Atkinson Memorial Center in Windsor.
So what would this entail?
We're gonna have a few members from our club there, from our travel team, and they'll be putting on a little bit of a demonstration, wheelchair basketball. We're also going to have a bunch of equipment there, a bunch of wheelchairs for people that want to come out and give it a try. We'll be there for 2.5 hours, 10 until 12:30 ish.
So, are you reaching out to folks who might potentially be interested in coming out and giving it a shot?
Well, we've reached out through some of the service providers. Like community living and Drummond Givney Center, places like that. And, of course, our Facebook is our main source of information. Find a lot of people are still using Facebook. We're just trying to target all the right places that we can to get as many people out as we can.
So have you ever done an event like this before?
Not quite like this, no. We've done different demos where we invite people out to practices. But, no, this is going to be our first actual dedicated try-it day. Partly celebrating Wheelchair Basketball Week.
So what would the ideal outcome be if you could have any result come of the Try-It Day? What would it be?
I would like to have 300 people there trying wheelchair basketball. The more the merrier. You know, just raising awareness and getting people to try something new or maybe something they've always wanted to try and just didn't have access to. And ultimately from that, maybe getting a couple new athletes that want to come out and play.
So I'm guessing it'll include some of the tutorials on any difference between wheelchair basketball and the able-bodied equivalent.
Yes, exactly. That's primarily what we focus on is the very few differences between wheelchair basketball and stand-up basketball. And then we focus on some very basic fundamentals of chair control and ball control.
Aside from the Try-It Day, are there any projects on the horizon with September coming? I'd imagine that more people will be back in the area and wanting to get back into an athletic rhythm.
Yeah, so our practice season will be starting actually 2 days after our Try-It Day, so Monday, September 29th, beginning at 7 p.m. at Essex Recreation Center in Essex. And we'll be there from 7 to 10 every Monday night until the end of April, holidays excluded, of course. And along with that, we are starting a new format within our league where we're running tournament-style weekends for our regular season play. So while some of that scheduling is still to be determined, there are some meetings planned, and we're really looking forward to seeing how this new season is going to play out for us.
So with the tournaments, I'd imagine ideally you'd get some teams from other areas coming in and giving your guys a run for their money.
Yeah, so last season we had 6 teams in the league. We're hoping to get a couple more with this new format for play. We find it a little bit easier for people to travel and schedule time off when they know it's a whole weekend instead of just traveling for a one-day event. Makes it a little bit more challenging for people. So we're hoping that this does increase the membership for the teams that want to participate and get us some more games in, which is what we're really looking forward to, is competing against the other teams again and seeing where our practice and training takes us.
Recent memory with Rose City Riot, is there any success moment or story you'd like to share?
We are always growing. Like, year over year, we're finding a little bit more success and a little bit more growth within our program. I'd have to say that this past season was probably our best season. We had our biggest growth in numbers for a single season, which was great. But then we also were able to extend our season a little bit. Typically, regular season play after our championship ends in about March. And this summer, there were women's tournaments that were being held in the GTA. And with the growth of our membership, we had a few additional female athletes that wanted to compete this year. So we were able to go down and actually attend this tournament, which was a great experience for everybody involved, including myself as a coach, because this was my first time actually coaching without having to play. So I was able to focus more on just the coaching aspect of it and trying to help my team find some success.
So as a coach, do you find that your own experience, your own athleticism is helping you to guide these young players to their own success in the game?
Yes and no. My experience through wheelchair basketball, a lot of it I'm self-taught, or I've learned from my teammates just playing. I don't necessarily have the foundation that a lot of my friends and counterparts have when it comes to the sport itself. So really, a lot of the tools, resources, and information that I've learned and gathered over the years has actually been come from training to be a coach. It's provided me more resources than I've been able to find myself online and through my friends and colleagues, simply because the training is designed to help a coach excel. So it's put in a format that is very plainly legible and understandable.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me again, Kim.
My pleasure.
In this segment of our show, Craig Jamison will be telling us a little bit about his mental health advocacy.
So, for your music, how has it led you to become a mental health advocate? Yes, I know you've done some work advocating for folks with mental health concerns through your music. How do the two sort of gel?
Yeah, you know, if you ask my dad, he would say that music saved my life. When I was younger, I experienced bullying and things like that, and made me feel kind of down on myself. And when I discovered music, that gave me an outlet to release my angst and you know, my emotions and my fears and all of that. And in creating those songs and creating that art form, it gave me a release and some perspective, and just helped me feel better about these kind of sad situations that were happening to me. And then, you know, in my 20s, I had brutal panic attacks. They were crippling, serious agoraphobia, and things like that. And it was a really hard time in my life because I didn't understand what the things that were going on. And I felt like people were kind of outside looking in at, like, this weirdo who was having these panic attacks, and they would tell me things like, just chill out, you're fine, and stuff like that, which was kind of, seemed like an insurmountable thing for me to just be able to relax. But the one place that I found solace, which is kind of counterproductive, was on stage. Being lost in my music, not even just on stage, but in rehearsal space, writing songs, all of that type of stuff. And it gave me, I guess, an outlet for all of that sort of, like, maybe built up anxiety and energy that was poking at me and causing these things to get it out. And why I say it's counterproductive, it's interesting if you think about panic attacks, anxiety, and stuff like that. Agoraphobia, people would naturally think, well, we wouldn't want to be in front of hundreds of people singing your heart out and entertaining people. But that actually was the one place where I actually felt most like me and most in control of the situation. So that really helped me manage my mental health as well. And then most recently, I wrote a song called Come Around, which is really kind of the story of my experience with mental health challenges and these panic attacks and stuff like that, and my mantra that I tell myself to kind of bring myself back to being grounded and back to my reality and away from these things as well. So that's just another testament of how by getting things on paper and then sort of out in an art form, how it can be super cathartic in that sense. And then I met Mark with Big Records, and he does a lot of charity events with his artists, and he kind of put this bug in my ear about getting behind a cause that I can utilize my music to help empower people to build community, even raise money for charities and things like that through my art. And so it was always going to be mental health, because like I said, I've always struggled with it, and it's always been kind of top of mind. And so now I use my music to bring people together, like-minded people, in a community, a supportive community, where there's no stigma around mental health, where people can discuss it openly and heal, use each other to heal. And I'm a big believer that music brings people together. It's good for the soul. When you move to music, when you dance, even the way your brain receives musical information from a cognitive perspective, it's very healing. So I think that music is a super powerful tool to help people through their struggles. So I've definitely attached my musical identity to that, and not shy from talking about my experiences and writing songs about my experiences, and hoping that people can really not feel alone, because when I was going through my struggles, I always felt like alone, that nobody understood me. And I don't want anyone to go through that. If anybody's going through any kind of mental health challenges, I want them to know that other people are going through it too. And, it's okay to talk about it and feel it and understand it. And that's what I hope a song like Come Around will do, is let people know that they're not alone in that struggle.
So do you find that use of music as an art is more of a cool, relatable way to get the message across? I mean, people might ignore a statistic or just a set of facts about mental health concerns, but hearing that this affects a real person with a real story, you find that using art such as music helps build that bridge?
100%, yeah. I mean, pop culture is just something that people, is super relatable to people. So a song, a video, a movie, whatever it might be, I think it, and I think it also, it isn't forced, it's almost like organic or almost osmosis, in the sense that the information is perceived in more of an enlightening and fun and interesting way. And that way, the message is actually kind of better received than somebody just providing a white paper or doing a dissertation on it or whatever it might be, right? So it almost is kind of fun and learning in that sense, that people can engage with something that interests them and excites them, but at the same time, it's breaking down barriers and walls for them. And I think it's also just about the fact, it's almost collective, that if somebody, because when you look at our big, the musicians that we like and stuff, and the songs that we resonate with and stuff like that, I think one of the reasons why we resonate with those lyrics and stuff like that is because they tell a story of something that we can be personally relatable to. And so that makes a big difference, because I think people want to know that they're understood and that there's other people that are going through the same things that they are. And, with the exception of maybe jumping on a group of people that are going through the same thing and getting feedback that way. I think that that music and media in general is just a great way to show that there's consideration to what people's struggles and challenges are, and that even people who seem like they're doing great are and we almost kind of emulate or idolize are going through these same struggles, and I think that brings kind of peace of mind.
So do you see yourself continuing to create music for this demographic, those who are facing mental health challenges and concerns, and hopefully through your music building them up a little?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's a crazy world right now. There's just so much sadness and depression, and people are struggling to make ends meet and things like that. And, you know, regardless of even the content itself, if it's like contextually about mental health, that's one thing. But I think, you know, maybe just having an upbeat, fun song that you like to sing along to, that's going to help mental health, right? Because that's going to provide somebody with an outlet to release endorphins, get dopamine hits by dancing or singing along or just really being involved in the music or the media, and almost an escape too, like, you know, giving them an escape from the struggles and the pressures of everyday life. And so if my music can do that for people, then that's amazing. If I can help people kind of cope with things that they're going through my music, then I'm happy to, you know, keep writing until I'm 6 foot in the grave. Like, and when I look at the noble purpose of why I am a musician, that's really what it is. This music has really helped me in my life get through my struggles and my challenges, and I do believe that it's a powerful tool to you know, either distract or support people that are going through whatever struggles or challenges.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. Andy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Disability Studies Students Association is a small and tight-knit community of people who are passionate about and committed to representing and supporting disability studies students at the University of Windsor. The DSSA holds events on campus and in the community, like the annual Down Syndrome Day Walk, to raise funds for supporting organizations. If you would like to get involved or learn more, you can contact the Disability Studies Student Association directly at dssa@uwindsor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, John Aslan gave us an update on Rose City Riot, and we heard from mental health advocate and musician Craig Jameson.
In this segment of our show, Jason Camus will be telling us about Sertoma International. So what can you tell me about your work with Sertoma International?
Well, Sertoma International has been around 100 plus years, always located in Kansas City, and we have groups of volunteers and clubs located all over the United States, in Ontario and northern Mexico.
So,
and our, and each one of those clubs, you know, essentially decides how they best want to serve their community. And then we're kind of bound together, I suppose, collectively. A lot of our clubs work in the world of hearing health.
I understand there's also an international hearing aid project going on. Can you tell me a little about that?
There is. So we founded, hearing health has been a core tenet, or, you know, the mission of Sertoma since the 1960s and 1970s. And in the last 25 years or so, we've created a number of hearing-related programs to serve the hard of hearing community or the deaf community, that can be both executed by us, but also by community groups or our clubs. And the Hearing Aid Project is probably our signature program. It started in 2016, and while it started slowly, it has just grown exponentially in the last couple years. And essentially what we do is we collect hearing aids, we refurbish as many of them as we can, and then we redistribute them back out to low-income individuals at no cost to those individuals. And we do it through a partnership of audiologists and hearing instrument specialists across the country. They come from the private sector, they work for major health systems or hospitals, nonprofit clinics, and a couple dozen universities. And so patients come to us, they can self-refer, or they can be referred by, you know, it could be by a doctor, it could be by an audiologist. Somebody goes, finds out they have hearing loss, they realize they can't afford the cost of hearing aids because of their situation, so they can apply to our program. We do have income guidelines and that, and they have to have basically moderate to severe hearing loss that would be treatable with hearing aids. And then we approve them, and we work with an audiologist or a clinic in their area to fit them with those hearing aids at no cost.
What are the key benefits to low-income individuals of having the gift of hearing restored?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, you know, our clientele, because they're not our patients, so we consider them clients. You know, they come from all different walks of life, but primarily we get a lot of low-income seniors who maybe are on fixed income, who are, you know, trying, they want to hear their grandkids. They want to, maybe they've gone their whole life with having subpar hearing and maybe no hearing at all in one or both ears. And, you know, this is an opportunity, you know, we hear that a lot. Like, oh my gosh, I can play with my grandkids and I can listen to them and I can go to their school concerts or their school musical and I can hear them. And we know that's obviously significant for their you know, their own life and just their quality of life. And then another population that we oftentimes serve will be the working poor, you know, maybe in their 20s and 30s, sometimes individuals who maybe have other disabilities and they've been in the system where they're serviced, but they turn 18 or 21 and they age out and they don't have those services available to them. And so a lot of times, you know, we'll get feedback from our clients that receive hearing aids. They're like, you know, this has allowed me to get gainful employment or to stay employed, and that. And so we get a whole wide spectrum of individuals, and really they're just, you know, all in, have that need, and their income doesn't allow them to, you know, afford the $44,000 cost of a set of hearing aids.
So, in your time doing this work, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you you'd like to share?
Well, I think, I mean, every single one of them, obviously, I would love to hear every client's story, but we do get a lot of those. And, you know, probably the grandparent, I always go back to the grandparent who says, you know, they either can hear their kid or they can hear their baby, their grandson or granddaughter, cry for the first time. But then there's also ones that are like, oh my gosh, I've never heard birds chirping before, you know. And as someone who has good hearing, and I don't have that, you know, and actually nobody on our staff has recognized hearing loss that any of us use hearing aids, you know, we're blown away because we just don't think about that, you know. And so those are always those stories that make a difference. But, you know, the great thing about Sertoma is we have a ton of other hearing-related programs. And, you know, and so we're, you know, I don't want to say constantly bombarded with good stories, but, you know, for example, we run a scholarship program nationally, and we give about 70 to 80 scholarships every year. A big chunk of those go to high school students or early college students who are deaf or hard of hearing. And then another chunk of those goes to graduate level students who are studying communicative disorders. So maybe they're going to be an ENT doctor, or they're going to be an audiologist or a speech language pathologist. But we try to capture some of the stories of those scholarship winners and they're overwhelmed because, you know, they never would have thought. I mean, the challenges that they have struggled through, maybe their whole childhood, being born with hearing loss, or maybe they have onset hearing loss as they, you know, get into their teen years, and then to get a scholarship to be able to help them pay for college. And in their minds, you know, most of them come to us and they tell us, hey, my plan is to give back and make this available for other, you know, other kids who were in our same situation. And so those are the stories that kind of keep us doing what we do.
Mike, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Definitely.
Friends, I'm just going to say it. I love the idea of folks with disabilities paying it forward. When someone with a disability shown an act of kindness or compassion, being given what they need, even if they can't afford it, having that opportunity to learn and grow, to participate just as anyone else, can be life-changing. And oftentimes there is this sense of, I want to do right by the people who made this possible. I want to do something to better disability culture. That's where it all begins, my friends. One of us building up another, so they too can build someone up in turn. It's an endless circle. The fact of the matter is, no one should be denied the opportunity to learn and to participate simply because they can't afford the right device to help them reach their best, to be at their full potential. And honestly, companies that make these things, they are in business to make money. They do, by definition, need to continue, but that is not to the exclusion of individuals with disabilities having their rights and their need to be included. Hearing of folks providing materials and resources at little to no cost is always something that reaches my heart. Yeah, companies measure things based on a balance sheet, but I maintain there's no way to measure person's potential. If given the right resources, the right moments, the right connections, a person can and will succeed, even if it's just in a way that they personally set out to do. That's one thing in the disabilities world that never ceases to amaze me. The fact that so many things are just viewed outright as inspirational. Sometimes a person with a disability will blaze a trail unintentionally. They may just be living their life the way they want to live it, doing the things they set out to do. But it does come down to their opportunities to do so, having the right equipment, having someone listen to their needs. I think someone saying, we're going to do whatever we can to make this possible for you. Someone with all the potential in the world who can't act on it is not contributing to their full potential. Full ability. It's like saying, drive to this place. No car, no gas. But if given the right moments, if resources are shared, and individuals build each other up, you might find you've created a whole new infrastructure, a whole new community, folks with disabilities who know that their voice matters because someone took the time have that little act of compassion just to say, you matter. I don't know how far you can take it, but I want to give you the freedom to explore that. You're not defined by my expectations. You're defined by your own hopes and dreams, working with the abilities you have been given. I maintain that is the greatest gift in disability life, the potential to explore, see what we're capable of. There's no roadmap to being a person with a disability. There are baselines to conditions, of course. These are just words in a textbook. They don't factor in human strength, ingenuity, the individual's hopes and dreams, and what drives them to succeed and better the world each day. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. Take a look at our program lineup at cjsf.ca to discover the diverse range of contents we bring to you.